Everyone, and welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Joe Lowry, and on today's episode, I was joined by Inter Miami's Julian Gressel to talk about all things Inter Miami and a bunch of other stuff as well, including his very own podcast pursuits, a great conversation with Julian Gressel, and then to finish out this show, I'm joined by the one, the only, the Taylor Rockwell, to talk all about the USMNT's upcoming clash with Jamaica on Thursday night in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals. We preview that matchup and build our preferred USMNT 11s as we look forward to Thursday evening. All that, plenty more on the show coming to you. Let's start things off with my chat with Julian Gressel. I am now joined by Julian Gressel. You know him well, one of Inter Miami's newest signings and capped by the U.S. men's national team. You can hear more of him over on the brand new and genuinely very, very good Player Manager podcast. Julian, thanks for coming on the show. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am doing quite well. I am grateful that you are here, and we're going to dig into what your life looks like right now, which is, I imagine, still a little crazy for you. Adjusting to life in Miami, playing on one of the highest profile soccer teams in the world right now. So let's go to the first impressions that you have of Inter Miami. You finished up in Columbus. You guys are lifting MLS Cup, partying afterwards. Everything is great. You decide that Miami is the next step for you. You get to the training facility in Miami, Fort Lauderdale for the first time. Surely you would spend time thinking about that moment, like the moment that you'd arrive and like see these guys and what that would feel like. You kick the ball around. What was your first impression of Inter Miami, of the roster of the big boys, Messi, Suarez, Busquets, Alba, everybody else? What was your first impression at that first training session?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it's hard because you run through so many emotions or throw so many scenarios in your head before that moment actually comes, right? Yeah. And then you're still stunned in the moment. Like, there's no doubt about it. I was like, okay, just kind of, you know, go in there, play cool, and then you know, just be yourself. And that's kind of what I really tried to do. The first moment or the first training where you know you have physicals and it's kind of very casual anyway. So yeah, meeting those guys was obviously special. It was very quick and short, just a, hey, I'm Julian. Nice to meet you. How are you? He didn't, or any of them didn't have to introduce themselves, obviously, because, you know, they know who we all know who they are, but no, it was nice to see, for example, I think I've told the story before where Busquets is, came up to me and was like congratulating me on the championship in Columbus, right away. So, you know, he knew of me, he knew, that I'm a new player here and all those things. And, those things were pretty cool, but, yeah, it obviously, you know, was super quick, super, super fun in the beginning and just kind of, yeah, them getting to know me and obviously me getting to know them on a personal level and shaking their hands and stuff was something pretty cool.
You mentioned Busquets sort of coming up and congratulating you about the win in MLS Cup for Columbus. Was Busquets watching MLS Cup? Do you think these guys are tuned in on a regular basis, or, you know, everybody kind of knows who won MLS Cup, so it's not that big of a transition to take?
So I have to say this, I think Busquets is probably the guy I talk the most with, about MLS and about other MLS games. Even now, as of recent, where we were in LA for a couple of days for our away game, and there were a few games on, the day before and the day of, and, we were all talking about it, and he was kind of coming up to me. He's like, oh, did you watch Columbus? Columbus, for example, you know, he really liked their style and liked how they played, for example. And, now, we just recently obviously played in DC, and we were able to even afterwards talk more about the tactical setup and how it is and what he thinks and, you know, things like that, where you can see how he can sense or he has a pretty good understanding, obviously, of the game. And but he also knows, or he's getting to know and is interested in the league and how different teams approach different games and all these types of things. So Busi is probably the one that I know watches, maybe not full 90-minute games every single game. I'm not doing that either, honestly. But he is, he's definitely interested in the league, in what the other teams do in terms of tactical setups and everything. The others, I'm not so sure about, to be honest. But I'm sure they watch. We have watched games together as a team during meals, you know, that are just on and everybody watches and is tuned in. So it's definitely encouraging to see, you know, a guy like Busquets, a statue, not to come here and just, you know, take it easy and just, you know, enjoy life, but also see how really interested he is in the game and in this league and growing this league and how other teams really, you know, play.
What's the locker room like? I'd imagine there are probably some, maybe factions isn't quite the right word, right? Because I think that maybe has a negative connotation to it. But there's got to be some groups here. And I imagine DeAndre Yedlin heading out to Cincinnati probably changes some of the dynamics internally as well. What's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, the locker room, I mean, let me start with this. Honestly, every locker room I've been in has had groups. I think that's normal, right? Yeah. I think it's normal to gravitate towards the, obviously, the people that you speak the language of, and you have similar backgrounds, similar backstories, you know, you come from the same countries. That's normal to gravitate to those kinds of people. So, you know, there's been groups in every single locker room I've been in, and obviously this one as well. You know, we all know that the four of them are really good friends. They like to hang out off the field as well, and with the families and everything. So it makes sense that they're together a lot, you know, but it's not like they're super off to the side and then the rest of the team. Not at all. They're super integrated. They're integrating us. Great. You know, if that's in rondos, if that's in the locker room and different activities, if that's mealtime where we all sit scattered a bit. And, you know, it's really not as separate as you would think. And I've really been impressed and been surprised by that a little bit, to be honest. But in general, we have obviously more Spanish speakers than English speakers, I think, at this point. So that's something obviously new for me, where usually it's like if we have meetings with, like, I don't know, the referees or the MLSPA before the season, for example, usually the Spanish speakers have to go somewhere else. Now it's the English speakers that have to go somewhere else, just to kind of, because there's less, they need less room. But that's obviously something, you know, I have to adjust to a little bit, and it's interesting in that sense. But ultimately, you know, I think we're all pretty comfortable, and yeah, you know, guys like DeAndre Yedlin leaving, who was obviously a big locker room presence, captain before Leo got here and all those things. And then even guys like Gregore, who has been at the club for a long time and speaks both languages, is a very good connector in that sense. You know, leaving, those change the dynamics for sure. And, you know, present different challenges, but you know, we have a great group of guys. If that's Leo Campana, if that's even Luis Suarez, who speaks both languages, you know, Jordi Alba, who doesn't speak much English, is trying to, and he's super open and outgoing. And, you know, those guys help a lot to kind of keep the locker room light and refreshing. And obviously, you know, we're in first place. So things are certainly a bit easier that way. If, you know, it might be different if you don't win games.
Sure. Completely understandable. I want to look on the field. You mentioned being in first place. I'm curious about how playing with these superstars and how the general roster makeup of this Miami team, which is different than any other team in the league, you're getting a first glimpse look at that right now, Julian. I'm curious about how that changes how you specifically play, and especially in possession, right? I think early on, and we saw this last year with the League's Cup run, we saw it towards the end of the season for Miami before you even got there, that it's difficult, or it seems to be difficult, for some of the players who aren't those big superstars to find their rhythm and to figure out exactly where they fit in possession, the kinds of passes that they should be hitting, the types of runs they should be making. How have you sort of internalized maybe some feedback about those things? How have you grown more comfortable? And how has your own attacking style maybe had to change slightly with the different players that are around you now?
Yeah, it's definitely been an adjustment. And it's been at times, you know, harder than I imagined it to be in the beginning. Where, you know, we kind of never really had a full preseason where we had a lot of training sessions together to figure out kind of automatics and, you know, kind of just, you know, just getting to know each other, where we got thrown right into really big games and right into good against good quality opponents. So it really needed to happen on the fly a bit. And you have to find a bit of a balance, I think, where, yeah, you try and play, you know, for them in a sense, right? But I also can't forget of who I am as a player and what has gotten me to this point in a sense, right? So that is something that I had to adjust. And then I had a lot of conversations with the coaching staff about that too. And honestly, the biggest advice that they had given me is just be who you are and be myself. And they will try, or other players on our team are good enough to find their way around that and find their way to play, you know, with you within the certain way we want to play and find their effectiveness within that. So that is something, I had to adjust. And, you know, it obviously, I think my game in general is a bit different than what it is in other teams or what it has been in other teams, where, you know, there's a lot more responsibility on me defensively as well, which obviously takes away a little bit from the offensive side. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to stop being Julian Gressel, the guy that can provide service and the guy that can provide assists and create goal scoring opportunities, you know, going forward. So it was an adjustment, but at the same time, it's something that I think everybody kind of adjusted to. And then, you know, me trying to be as much as myself as I can be is, I think, the most helpful thing.
You've worked with Tata Martino before at Atlanta United, had a lot of success there. As you're in the offseason this past winter, thinking about what the next step is and Miami becomes a real possibility, what were the conversations that you and Tata were having about maybe how he envisioned you fitting into this team and how you envisioned that process going? And how does that sort of tie now to you actually being on the field and popping up in a few different spots as the season's gone on?
Honestly, there wasn't much conversation about my role before me getting to Miami. You know, I think I've had such a good relationship with Tata ever since my days in Atlanta, where I knew that he was going to try and use me what is the best for the team. And that's what I want to do as well. You know, where if I need to play left-sided center mid, because that's at the moment the best position for me in the way we play, then I play left-sided center mid. If I need to play right back or right wing back or right winger or right-sided center mid, you know, it doesn't matter. And he kind of knew that. So there really wasn't much conversation about, hey, you know, you're only going to play there. Honestly, when I got there, he was like, you're going to play there some games. Everywhere on the right side, basically, maybe sometimes sure. Left side in the midfield too. So, you know, it just kind of changes and that. I obviously appreciate that from him because he knows that, or I know that he trusts me in all those different spots, you know, and that's something I don't take for granted. That's something I try and work hard for. And again, it's something I knew coming into it that I can play multiple positions. I will play multiple positions, and that was totally okay with me. That's why I didn't have too many questions about my specific role or anything like that either.
What's Tata like as a coach? Like, you've seen him now in multiple different spots. Has he changed at all? Has he changed anything about how he communicates with his players or runs a locker room? And also, I'm not sure actually I know how much English he speaks. How do you guys communicate? Does he speak some English, or you got some Spanish in your bag? What does that look like?
Yeah, his English is much better than I think people know, where he understands a lot and he can get a point across pretty easily as well. Obviously not fluent, but, you know, that's kind of where my Spanish is at too. So we've kind of talked sometimes in Spanish, sometimes in English. So it's interesting, kind of that dynamic, but he's certainly changed in a way where now he knows the league better and he knows the American culture better. He knows how demanding this league is in certain moments. He knows how obviously to deal with superstars like Leo and Luis and all those guys. And I think he has a really good understanding of the group in general. And he's intense. Yeah, he's demanding. And he wants obviously the best out of the group and the best out of every individual player. But at the same time, he knows when to take the foot off the gas and joke around and have a laugh and enjoy and all these things. So it's been a little bit different than what he was in Atlanta, because I think of him understanding the culture, the league, kind of all of that a little bit more. And obviously also a different type of roster that we have, where in Atlanta, we had a lot of younger DPs that were the starting of their career, where here we're more established, a little bit of an older group in general. So I think he has a really good feel for those types of things. And he's certainly, it's been enjoyable. It's been a lot of fun for me to kind of experience that on a little bit of a different level, but at the same time, feeling the trust and the familiarity with him is something that I enjoy a lot at the moment.
We'll get right back to my conversation with Julian Gressel, but first, a word from our lovely sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Thank you again to our wonderful sponsors. Now back to my chat with Julian Gressel. Sticking on the coaching side and dipping into the tactical side a little bit, I'm curious about how much of what is happening on the field for Inter Miami is player-driven and specifically driven by Leo Messi, because that is the elephant in the room, and how much of that is coming specifically from the coaching staff as they're digging in super deep to these detailed game plans. Like, what is that split like between the player side and the coaching side of the tactical equation?
Yeah, I think that goes back to what I just said, where Tata understands what Leo is to this team, right? And where sometimes we need to make adjustments in a sense, especially defensively, I think, right? Where, it's something that they understand the tactical approach, and they kind of combine all that, where it's not a lot player driven. It's not a lot without Tata talking about, without Tata's, input or anything. It's really him understanding the full picture, knowing that sometimes, we have to cover a bit more defensively and all those things. And I think that's something very, somewhat normal and okay, in my opinion, where I think I heard one coach say that we only defend with 8 players, which, good luck trying to attack with 10 and leaving our other 2 guys up free, So it's those types of things where we also know that the game goes both ways. So Tata has a really good understanding and a really good feel for that aspect as well, where, he calculates that and he integrates that into the tactical setup, the game plan, and those types of things as well. So it's not too much just from the players. It's all kind of, coming from one voice, and that's usually Tata, and everybody's on the same page, and everybody is fully engaged and 100% behind that plan of what they come up with.
How much heads up are you all getting in terms of some of the shape changes, right? Because we've seen back threes, we've seen back fours. You already mentioned it. Your roles changed a bunch this year. You were a little higher against DC on the wing, and we've seen you a little deeper, a little more inside. Like, when are those plans trickling out before the games? Because you all have had a very congested schedule so far this year.
Yeah, it depends a little bit. It depends a little bit on how congested it is before the game. If there's 2 days in between and 2 days in between, it's tougher to really train it's more conversations that you have maybe the day before the game, or one day you have to recover, and then the next day you kind of, all right, start turning the page. And that's something where it's more conversational. But, if you have 3 days, for example, then the day before the game, usually we do some sort of like walkthrough type trainings and stuff where, now I think we're pretty comfortable in both systems. So that's obviously something that I think we've worked on ever since coming into preseason, that I think you're comfortable with the 4 in the back from last season. And now, the 3 in the back is obviously something that they added new this year, where we can play both ways depending on the personnel a little bit and kind of obviously the opponents. So it's something, we've worked on and we feel comfortable with, and we can change quickly. You don't need to talk too many, things in general. You can talk about details, yes, but general ideas and general principles will stay the same, and things like that. So not really too concerning if we found out day of the game because we had, a last minute change or things like that. So it's really not that big of a deal. if there's that short notice and that congested schedule, that's why we've had preseason. That's why we've talked a lot about different setups and what we're trying to do within the different shapes.
Shifting back off the field a little bit, I'm very, very curious about the spectacle of Miami right now, because you saw it on the preseason tour. Like that is something that's never really happened to that extreme in Major League Soccer before. And obviously that's not something that you've experienced before either, Julian. Like this is uncharted territory for you personally. How are you adapting to the spectacle of Miami? Because I am sure, just as one example, I'm sure that your Instagram comments and in general, like social media, just as one part of your life, looks way different now than it did, I don't know, 4 months ago.
Yeah, it's something that I tried to prepare myself for. Obviously, knowing who you have on the team with you, knowing what impacts, those guys have on things like social media, on things like, even if it's just the league website where you see a lot of obviously Miami and Leo Messi stuff. And it's something that is a driver in this sport, right? Leo himself, and obviously now Inter Miami with that is something that is always going to be looked at and always going to be watched. So there's a ton of eyes on you at all times. And it's something that I certainly tried to prepare myself for, but yeah, Instagram's different. You know, you get some more good comments when it's going well. You get some more bad comments when it's not going so well. So it's something that you have to work through, and honestly, all I'm trying to really do is focus on my play and focus on us winning as a team, and how I can do that on a daily basis to, you know, get the guys ready, get myself ready as best as I possibly can, and then perform when the whistle blows, you know, and everything else is kind of, it just is what it is. It's something that I had to adjust to. The preseason tour was absolutely nuts, to be honest with you, to see people in El Salvador out at 2 a.m. at a team hotel, you know, chanting Messi, Messi, not just 50, but I think 2,000-3,000 is crazy and something that, blew me away a little bit, obviously. You know, and no matter where we went, it was nuts like that. Where, you know, in Japan or in Hong Kong, there was people driving by the bus every red light. They're trying to get out, banging on the bus window, trying to get signatures from guys. And it's certainly different. Where now, every time you go away, it's a huge spectacle, like you said, and that's something, you know, I have to adjust to a little bit. It's not something I was used to before from this league, but it's also something that hasn't really bothered me or hasn't really bothered us. Yeah, there's more security measures and everything, and the club has done a tremendous job of obviously trying to, you know, mitigate that in a sense where it doesn't affect us really ever. We can still go about our business and get ready for the games as best as we possibly can. So, it's an adjustment, but it's new. But it's certainly something that, I'm sure I'll get used to even more as it goes on, and something that I'll be able to handle better as time passes.
You kind of got to some of this in that answer. And I know you've talked a little bit about it on Player Manager. Again, folks should go check that out. What is it like traveling with Inter Miami? And how different is it than, I don't know, catching a flight or heading to a hotel with Vancouver last year at the early part of the year, or even Columbus or any of the clubs you've been with in MLS? Like, has there been a moment that you realize, oh, like this is way different? Like, there are security on this plane, or there's security at the airport. Like, what has that been like?
Oh, in general, everything's been different from the start. You know, I think the first away trip we had, I think, was El Salvador, and to see kind of that, you know, those people just out and trying to get a glimpse of Leo and Luis and Busi and Jordi, and, you know, just to see that the level of affection they have and the level of engagement they create wherever they go is incredible. But you see that, and then even like when we go to LA, there's always people out all day in front of the hotel, you know. But travel is different, where sometimes I don't even see the lobbies of the hotel that we're staying in, where we go into service elevators and kind of use the back corridors with always security on our floor. And, people always obviously protecting us, and Yassin being obviously the face of that. There's a lot more to our security detail than just him. But It's certainly been a lot different where you fly, you know, on a little bit of a nicer planes, and you stay in the nicer hotels. So in that sense, it also has its perks a little bit. But again, there's always eyes on you. There's always people that try and get a piece even through you, where even if I were to go for a walk, for example, trying to be like, hey, when are these guys coming out? Can we see them? Can you get them to come out? Those types of things. But it's certainly been a challenge and sometimes to try to adjust to it a little bit. But at the same time, now it's like just business as usual. It's the routine that we're in, and something that is our new normal, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Just in case anybody out there doesn't know, Yassine, Lionel Messi's bodyguard, who has gone viral for all sorts of bodyguarding things over the last year or so. How do you feel, Julian, about Miami? And you've been in MLS long enough to sort of get a really good feel for this. How do you feel about Inter Miami being the villains? Like, you're talking about them being on the league website everywhere. You guys are getting the coverage, and I think are very much at the center of what is a growing media storm around Major League Soccer right now. I guess maybe to back up a step, do you feel that way? Like, do you feel any of that external pressure? And maybe do you embrace that at all?
I don't know if I would call us villains. That would probably mean that everybody's against us. I think there's just obviously a lot of eyes on us and a lot of curiosity behind us, right? Where, you know, there's high expectations. I think we know that. That obviously comes with the players that we have on our team. But I'd rather have that than have the expectation of potentially making the playoffs. You know, I'd rather play on a team that has the expectation of winning every single game than the expectation of, okay, let's see how it goes kind of a thing, you know? So we know that there's pressure. It's probably as high as it's ever been in this league, I think, for a team to win and to kind of produce, make international runs, all these types of things. So it's something different, but it's also something I think more clubs should strive for, and to have the ambition of the club and to have the willingness to dream big in Miami, I think, is something that is unprecedented in Major League Soccer, and I'm totally excited for that. I was excited for that signing here. I certainly wasn't shying away from that in a sense where, hey, we have to lower expectations. No, I think, you know, those expectations are there. They're there for a reason, and we have to go out and produce. And I think, obviously, you know, those guys, the four especially, have produced that their whole careers. Some of us have within MLS, within other leagues. So we certainly know that that's there, but we're excited for that challenge and we're up for it. And, you know, if we also know, I think we've talked about this a lot in the preseasons and everything, where we know we're going to get the best game out of everybody in this league. You know, it's the biggest games of everybody's season when we come to town, you know, and that's something obviously very special. It's something you have to prepare yourself mentally for a lot, where there's obviously no easy games, which there never really is in MLS, to be honest with you, but there's no days where, you know, other teams might not feel it. You know, they're always feel it against us, you know, and that's something we'll certainly have to be ready for every single time, and will test us. It'll test us in a big way later on down the stretch this season. But it's been good, in my opinion, to have that and to have that ability or that freedom to dream, I think is a slogan for the club too. So it kind of makes sense to really have that ambition, and I love it, to be honest.
Speaking of ambition, just so listeners know, Julian's been trying to come for my job. He's been a podcast mogul over the last stretch. I want to talk about this new podcast that you have called Player Manager. Again, I've listened to that and genuinely enjoyed. You and Zealand do a really good job. Before that, though, I actually want to look back at a previous podcast that you co-hosted alongside Chicago midfielder and fellow German Fabian Herbers, called Z Soccer Podcast, elite name, by the way, to make that very clear. What was the motivation behind starting that show? Like, how did that happen?
So that one about with Fabi back in the day was really just us talking. We both liked podcasts, listening to them, and we were like, hey, what do you think? There's no other players in this league that have something like this. Like, why don't we try and do it and just see where it goes and kind of talk about the league, talk about MLS, and talk about other things happening around the world from a player's perspective. So that was the idea behind it. Ultimately, I thought we enjoyed it. We had a good time, but it ultimately failed a little bit of the background support, I want to say. Where we didn't really know how to take it to the next level. And so we kind of stopped it again because we also didn't want to just continue just to continue. It was kind of getting to a point where it was a lot on us to kind of prepare. Obviously, podcasting is not easy, I found out. So it's something that I enjoyed, though. So that's why I've always kind of tried to find the next opportunity. And, you know, what better opportunity there is than obviously now me playing for probably the most high profile team in the league. And, you know, kind of giving a little bit of insight into that club and into what is going on behind the scenes. So, yeah, I had the opportunity now to do another podcast with Sealand called Player Manager. It's something that I think we've done two episodes now, recording another one tonight. So, yeah, just the beginning of it, but I'm certainly enjoying it. I'm, you know, having fun, like I said, and it's something that, yeah, who knows? Maybe it's something I would like to do post-career. But again, I think there's podcasts out there that are led by NBA players, by NFL players, you know, all those types of the big sports in the US. And I always thought, okay, you know, there's not that many guys doing this now in MLS. I think Dax McCarty is one of the only other ones that is still active doing it, you know, with his podcast. And, you know, I'm not at the end of my career. So, but I'm kind of right in the middle of it, to be honest with you. And I want to provide that insight. I want to give the fans a real look into what it's like from a player. Obviously, I can't tell everything. I know that too. And then I hope fans understand that too. But it's certainly been good. And I'm trying to, yeah, just grow the game, trying to, you know, engage the more fans by doing this. And like I said, I think that there's so much opportunity for us to grow the game before the World Cup. And if I do my little part by having this podcast, by giving a little bit of a background inside look into what life is like as an Inter Miami player, then I'm trying to do my best for that.
So maybe we could be looking at Julian Gressel, the pundit, after your career is over, maybe a media career is on the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm considering. it's something that I try and test, you know, I try and see if it's something for me. And I think a podcast like this helps, where if I absolutely don't like it and you see the podcast disappear again after a year or two, and I'm like, okay, I don't really want to do that. Then it also had a purpose, you know, in a sense where I know, okay, that's not something I want to do post-career, but I do like the media side of it, and obviously it's intriguing. I like to watch, and like I said, I think there's a ton of growth opportunity within this league to even expand coverages and get more insides into teams and into clubs and into this league. So it's something that I'm conscious of, and I'm trying to just see if I like it or not.
Julian Gressel, ladies and gentlemen. Julian, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your insights with us. It was great to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Of course. No, I appreciate it. And yeah, if we can not steal some followers, but, you know, just add a second soccer show or podcast to the mix by you guys listening to Player Manager, that'd be amazing. Like I said, we talk most things Inter Miami and also some other things about the world of soccer in general, just to keeping it light and enjoying the time on there. But we'd appreciate every listen that we get.
I am I'm a podcast fiend, and it has cracked my rotation. So that is a high compliment. Go check it out. Go listen to Player Manager, available wherever you get your podcasts. A big thanks again to Julian Gressel for taking time to come and hop on the show. Before we get to our USMNT versus Jamaica preview with Taylor Rockwell, let's hear from our sponsors.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public, the other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy, it's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. I'm no longer joined by Julian Gressel. Instead, I'm joined by the one, the only, the lovely Taylor Rockwell. Taylor, first of all, hello. Good to
hello.
See you.
Hello.
You
look downgrade. Beautiful. Downgrade from Julian Gressel to me. But happy to be here. Happy to
upgrade,
be here, my friend.
Upgrade in the facial hair department, Taylor. No one can ever take that away from you unless, of course, you shave your beard, in which case you've got nothing. Taylor, let's talk about the
USMNTs. Accurate. Yes.
Let's talk about the USMNTs CONCACAF Nations League semifinal game coming up on Thursday evening against Jamaica. We're going to dig into what this Jamaica team likes to do, who they are, some of their tactical approaches, maybe a couple players to watch, and then we'll end with a USMNT 11. Taylor, you've been watching some Jamaica footage. What have you noticed from them so far? What is the U.S. going to be up against on Thursday?
All right. I'm going to say something that makes me physically uncomfortable, but I'm going to say it anyway. The United States should win this game. And that is not meant to be disrespectful to Jamaica. That is not overlooking anything about Jamaica. It is just looking at the present Jamaica team and recognizing that they are without a number of key players. I went back and watched them play against Canada. Their 3-2 win on the road against Canada, that was the reason they got to this point in this competition. And it's a good performance. They had multiple opportunities that they did not take. They caused Canada problems. I think Canada let it be a physical game and then let Jamaica control the ball more in the second half, much to their undoing. But a number of players involved in that game will not be here. Ethan Pinnock, their starting center back, is out injured. Damari Gray is suspended. Shamar Nicholson is also suspended. He started up top alongside Leon Bailey, who is removed from the team for disciplinary reasons. He broke curfew. So I would say four of their pretty key players from that win over Canada will not be here. Mikel Antonio will be involved, so that does still give them some firepower. We'll see a number of young players getting their debut or getting maybe like their first looks against a team like the United States. And that's where I say it's still a good Jamaica team, a talented team that can spring surprises, can cause problems, but is a weaker Jamaica team than I think I was expecting at this point in the tournament.
Yep, that's completely fair and lines up with exactly what I have. This Jamaica team is absolutely not at full strength. Heimar Hallgrímsson is their manager, 56-year-old Icelandic coach, has been in charge of the team since September of 2022. He has a very clear tactical approach. From everything that I've seen of Jamaica, we saw Hallgrímsson coach against the U.S. at the Gold Cup last summer. He wants to defend in a mid-block. There'll be occasional bits of pressing, but it is a lot of deeper defending.
I like the exact same notes. Yeah,
yeah, that leads to these like quick physical transition attacks. That's Jamaica's MO. And in some ways, Taylor, especially defensively, they're able to handle the absence of someone like Ethan Pinnock because they don't overextend terribly often, right? The great equalizer in soccer is a lower block because you make life just so difficult and often miserable for the opponents. You know, Jamaica are going to do that stuff. They're going to make, or at least try to make, the U.S.'s life very, very difficult. The U.S. will likely have the vast majority of possession at an even game state. All that stuff is true. Where the absences really hurt, and this isn't like, man, hashtag great analysis or anything along those lines, but because they are so reliant on those transition attacks, they're often reliant on their quality to go out there and rescue something for them in the attacking half. And missing Shamar Nicholson, Damari Gray, Leon Bailey, players we've already mentioned, that is a huge loss. They are not devoid of difference makers. Mikel Antonio is still on this team. He is a handful for any defender in this region, basically any defender in the world. But Taylor, I think where we're going to see the drop-off, watch Jamaica score three in the first half.
Yep.
Where we're going to see the drop-off is going to be in the effectiveness of Jamaica transitioning into the attack.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Joe. And I give Heimar Hallgrímsson a lot of credit that in this game, which is a really high-profile game for him, to not include Leon Bailey because of breaking curfew, I think is a pretty gutsy move to remove him from the calculations when you have so many other players suspended or injured. I think Trevante Stewart, the young attacker, is the other one who's suspended for breaking curfew. So he does sort of limit himself, but maybe is also trying to exert a little bit of authority on this team and sort of stamp down his identity. As we said, this is an Icelandic manager. He managed Iceland when they knocked out England in the Euros, and I think a similar approach will be expected here, which is to say, I think they're going to defend deep. I think they're going to try to frustrate the United States. I think that they will look for direct attacks if and when they're on. And so with that in mind, I look at the way Canada end up losing that game, and it's sort of self-inflicted. It's turnovers when they don't need to happen. It's individual mistakes that put Canada into bad positions where they're outnumbered or they allow for much more clear counterattacking opportunities. And then it's really, as I said, Canada just not controlling the game, not playing the game that they were playing in the first half when they're up 1-0. And I think for the United States, the biggest thing I would want to see in the opening 10 to 15 minutes of both halves is a little bit riding the initial intensity. It felt like Jamaica started strong in both halves, but then not slowing down. And that's not to say they can't recycle possession, they can't control the ball. It's that if it's a lot of 1, 2, 3, 4 touches and then a pass, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 touches and then a pass, I think that lets Jamaica get set in their shape. It lets them basically be in a shell that requires the United States to do something individually. And I think as the game goes on, if they haven't gotten anything, that's when you could see them get overextended, overcommitted. You could see an individual try to dribble in, get stuck, and now there is a counterattacking opportunity on. I think for the U.S., it's really important to keep the ball moving and really just keep the opportunities going, not lose heart, not lose faith, but keep sort of grinding away in the worst case and in the best case, playing really nice possession-oriented football where they can move the ball quickly, get into overloads, and I think big switches. That's another area where I think Canada were able to find some joy, is playing one side, switching to the other, and then trying to capitalize 1v1.
Yeah, I love all that, Taylor. And I think one of the first things that it always makes sense to look at when you have a pretty clear tactical matchup, like that everybody knows before the game, like Jamaica know how they're going to play, the U.S. know how they're going to play, everybody kind of knows what the general flow of this game is going to look like. When you have a team like the U.S. that are going to end up dominating the ball through large stretches of this match, one of the first things to look at is how quickly they are moving it. And that's exactly where you started. The tempo. Like, how quickly are you moving the ball both between the lines? And then when those passes aren't on, across from one side of the field to the other, whether that's with a big diagonal switch or with purposeful, and the emphasis there is on purposeful, like circulation across the back line, those are huge markers for the U.S. If we're watching this game on Thursday, and we'll review this match and have a full review after, I believe, Thursday evening, when we watch this team play, like we're going to look at and we're going to talk about what the tempo is like, what is the intensity, and the challenge from the U.S. in some ways will be, how do you generate some of that intensity without Tyler Adams? Because Tyler Adams is not this super huge, like, possession through ball threader guy. He is in this squad. It doesn't sound like he's fit to go 90, certainly. And I would be very, very surprised if he starts. But assuming it's someone other than Tyler Adams, how does the tempo evolve over the course of the game? How do they find those opportunities to go and not just look sharp in possession, but also react to the ball quickly with their counter pressing? All those things, Taylor, I think are going to be really huge, like potentially game deciding points of emphasis for Greg Berhalter.
No disagreement here. I want to talk about the personnel you would like to see then, Joe, if we're not going to see Tyler Adams. But first, I'm going to give you my best attempt at a Jamaica lineup, although okay. I'm not really confident because I still have no
it's
idea
hard.
Who starts
it's
on
really
the left.
It's really hard.
But I think we'll see a number of players that did play against Jamaica, so I would assume we will get Andre Blake in goal. I think we'll get Greg Lee as your left back, Dexter Lembekisa as your right back, and then probably Damian Lowe, and my assumption would be Michael Hector in the middle. It could be Deshaun Bernard. I don't know where Tavon Gray would start if he were to start, but I think it's less likely. I think it's probably the three that I mentioned at first, and then Michael Hector. We'll get Johnson and Lati Biodire.
You are a braver man than I, Taylor. You are a braver man than I am.
As your two midfielders, with Bobby Decord-Reed as your right-sided midfielder. Tamari Gray would normally start on the left. Maybe that's Casey Palmer, though I think he is right-footed and more of an attacking midfielder. So I'm not sure what they will do at left midfield. And then up top, without Shamar Nicholson, without Leon Bailey, my guess would be it's Corey Burke and Mikel Antonio. But I won't be surprised if it's other personnel in there.
Yeah.
Although I'll be slightly surprised because there's not a ton of depth to this Jamaica team. As I said, it's players we sort of know who are in their late 20s, early 30s, or it's like 19-year-olds.
Yep.
So there's some unknowns here, but I think for the most part, it's a team that largely knows how they want to play, knows how to play together, but there will be a couple question marks specifically at left midfield.
Well, in those two strikers that you mentioned, Taylor, like thinking about the physical nature of Corey Burke and Mikel Antonio, they can provide more than just physicality. But when you watch these guys play, like, that is the number one thing that jumps off the screen. I am really curious to see how the U.S.'s center backs and what we assume will be a 4-3-3, generally speaking, for the U.S. in this game. I'm really curious to see how those two deal with the, like, two-headed monster of that front two for Jamaica. It is a lot to go out there and deal with, especially with Jamaica likely going to be playing through those two players to then drop the ball underneath and maybe hit some sort of up, back, and through to release them in transition. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the U.S.'s center backs, and that is the reason why I've gone in my chosen lineup two center backs that I have. So I have Chris Richards because his name was written in pen for me, even if, not necessarily everybody's on board with that. I think you kind of have to be inching closer and closer to that at this point as he plays more for Crystal Palace. But as tempted as I am, and it's good to see Tim Ream in the squad, as tempted as I am to put Tim Ream in for his line-breaking passes, I ended up going with Miles Robinson next to Chris Richards just because that physicality legitimately scares me. I think it will scare Greg Berhalter. It should scare this U.S. men's national team. And I'm not sure that Tim Ream is the guy that I want dealing with at least one, if not two, really aggressive, strong center forwards who then can turn and play somebody else in behind. So I've got Richards and Robinson in the heart of my back line. Taylor, do you want to run through maybe the rest of your back four and toss in a goalkeeper as well?
Yeah, I've got Matt Turner in goal, though Ethan Horvath is in better form at club level. I would assume it's Matt Turner's job until it isn't. I would assume it's Anthony Robinson, Jedi Robinson at left back. I had Richards and Miles Robinson as my two center
Let's
backs.
Let's go.
Ream has the kind of veteran nous, but doesn't play this weekend, and that's factoring into my calculations probably more than it should. But I also think, Joe, your concerns about the physicality are valid. I also think, fundamentally, even if you're going to lose the physical challenges, I then want players that can keep up with the speed, and I think that's where, again, the Richards-Miles Robinson combo works well. Dest is suspended, correct?
Yes, no Serginho Dest.
So then we would assume it's Joe Scally at right back?
I think it kind of has to be, right? The four fullbacks in this squad. Dest is still in this squad, but just ineligible for this first game. You've got Dest and Scally, who are presumably the two right backs, so they can both play left back as well. And then Jedda Robinson and Christopher Lund. I would be really, really surprised if it's anything other than Jedda Robinson and Joe Scally. And I think that's probably the right way to go, even though, let's not forget, Joe Scally wasn't particularly good in November, and he's never been this, you know, lighting everything on fire player for the U.S. men's national team. He's just not that guy. Like, he's solid at best, and he is very capable of being solid. We just maybe didn't see it last time out. Either way, he is in my starting back line for this. I've got Matt Turner, Joe Scally, Richards, Robinson, and Jedi, exactly the same as you, Taylor. I would not be upset, to be very clear, if it is Tim Ream in this 11. I think that would be a fine decision. It comes with its own risks, as does the Miles Robinson decision if Berhalter chooses to go that way. What you gain in one phase with Robinson defensively, you lose in another with his, you know, relative inability compared to Tim Ream to break lines on the ball. So there are give and takes with basically any alignment you could go with here.
With the Dest suspension, there is also the possibility, you mentioned it, as a slight possibility, I think, that they go in a back three, and then, like, we've seen Tim Weah be a right wing back for Juve at times this season, so you could try that, but I don't think this is the time to do that. I think you stick with the 4-3-3 with the system and the approach that is most comfortable to most of the players, and then you adjust as needed if you need to, which leads to the question about the midfield, Joe. With Tyler Adams there, but not likely to start, and I would agree with you, that feels more like you give him 15 minutes, 20 minutes at the end of the game, if you're going to go that route, if he's going to get minutes at all. And then if he handles that well, if he seems fully up to speed, maybe he's starting in the final if the U.S. gets there. But if he is not starting, which it sounds like we both think he will not, the question then is, who is starting in the midfield? And I do think it's Weston McKennie. I do think it's Yunus Musa. I assume it would be Gio Reyna as the third, but I think that will be a really interesting thing. I'm not nailed on. I don't have him as a nailed on starter. I think a lot will depend on the camp and how things look in training.
I think that's all fair. I've got Yunus Musa on the bench in this game.
Interesting.
I don't love it, and everybody out there who knows how much I love Yunus Musa should know how difficult that is for me to say out loud. I have Johnny Cardoso, Johnny Soccer himself, as the number six. Not totally in love with that decision, but here we are. I have Weston McKennie as the only locked-in midfield starter for this team. I think he is an absolute must-start. And then I still have Gio Reyna. For all of the reasons that we talked about, Jamaica, tactically, want to sit deep. And Gio Reyna is, without a doubt, the closest thing that the United States men's national team has to a lock picker in that midfield group. He is the one who's going to unlock what Jamaica are going to present with their banks of four, maybe a 4-5-1. I think we're expecting a 4-4-2. Gio's still that guy. It's not Malik Tillman just yet. It's certainly not Yunus Musa in that skill set. Musa thrives against a team that wants to press high and that he can then break lines on the dribble. We're not going to see that against Jamaica. So again, I'm fine with the midfield that you presented. I'm fine with Musa. I'd be fine with Tillman. I'd even be mostly fine with Brendan Aaronson. In my opinion, you can't really go wrong. Aaronson and Haji Wright, we mentioned on the Weekend Review, injury replacements for this team. Luca De La Torre and Josh Sargent unable to come into camp after all. I'm mostly okay with any of those combinations, but I think the Johnny McKennie Gio midfield balance is maybe the best that Berhalter could put out on the field.
Why have you gone for Johnny over Musa?
So I wasn't in love with Musa back last fall, where he was playing the number six role. Tyler Adams was out. We saw him play, you know, significant minutes in that spot against Germany. We've seen it in other moments as well. I think we saw it in that Ghana game as well, if I'm remembering correctly. And I think he is a good player. I think he is still in some ways looking for his home in any midfield. That's been true at Valencia. It's true now at Milan. I think it's still true with the U.S. men's national team. Cardoso is just a little bit of a cleaner plug-and-play fit where he's playing deeper for Betis consistently in La Liga. The level is high that I feel like you're not as concerned about him just having an absolute shocker. But at the same time, I can make the argument the other way. Like, Cardoso's not been all that good for the U.S. men's national team. He hasn't been super sharp. He's kind of just been fine with the U.S. So again, I can see this going in either direction, but Cardoso having that continuity from club to country feels right to me.
The other interesting one would be Malik Tillman. You mentioned you don't have him in that, like, lock-picking category yet. I would agree with you. And though he has played in that sort of midfield advanced position for PSV this season. He is listed as an attacker, and I never quite know how much stock to put into that, because it's not as though they're like locked in there as a result. But we might see him start in the middle. We might see him sub in centrally, but I still think it is sort of the more experienced group. I don't know if Giorena is in that. Again, I think a lot of it will depend on training and how sharp he looks and how his attitude is. Always a fascinating one. That is definitely a wrinkle we'll have to keep an eye on. And then I'm assuming your front three is expected. The only question mark, weirdly, is Tim Weah. Though I love Tim Weah and think he is pretty exceptional at most things he does, it hasn't been the best season for him at Juve. Pulisic is obviously in great form. I think he starts. He's also your captain, so I'm guessing he starts on the left. I'm guessing Florin Balogun starts, though, Joe, I think you have recently been up in the air about that one a little bit more, or are you still nailed on Balogun?
I'm still nailed on Balogun, but there is legitimate competition for that spot. You have Haji Wright scoring goals, even though he's doing it as a winger. You've got Josh Sargent, who's not actually in camp, but Ricardo Pepi is constantly nipping at his heels. Brandon Vasquez not in camp either. There are names that are in this conversation. Balogun, to me, is just still all around the best number nine in the pool. You look at his talent, you look at the level he's playing at for Monaco. It hasn't been the smash success that I thought that move was going to be, but he's still the nine until someone like forcibly goes up to him and rips that shirt off of his back. Yeah. I've got Balogun through the middle, and I have no questions about Tim Weah whatsoever. Okay. He's gone through stretches of playing left back, for goodness sakes, in Ligue 1 before making the move to Juventus, and was still the U.S.'s best and most consistent attacker through World Cup qualifying. Berhalter said it on his presser after this lineup was announced. I don't remember if it was about Weah or if it was about someone else, but basically he said something to the effect of, you know, this player's been effective when they're with us. And so we can put up a bit more, paraphrasing, we can put up a bit more with a lack of consistent minutes or form or whatever at club level if they've been good for us. And Tim Weah has been the definition of good for the United States when he's been on the field.
All right. I feel good about that. And I always feel good about Tim Weah in the starting 11. So it's really basically like, who are your two midfielders, since we only have Weston McKennie written in pen?
And then the other center back.
And maybe who starts instead of Dest, but really it's only going to be Scally. So yeah. I'm feeling good, Joe. I'm feeling cautiously optimistic because it does feel like not the strongest Jamaica team we've ever seen. It feels like a mostly pretty strong U.S. team with a good amount of depth. And so I think in the end, the U.S. will get the win. I am feeling confident heading into Thursday. I look forward to breaking it down with you Thursday evening. That's the plan, correct?
That is the plan. Listeners, we'll be back again on the feed tomorrow for a listener question show. We'll be back then again late on Thursday with USMNT against Jamaica. There's going to be some sort of a draft episode in there as well, with the regular foursome back on the feed. Taylor Rockwell, thank you so much for joining me to preview all things USMNT Jamaica.
Thank you, my friend.
And listeners, thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back again later this week. We'll be right back.